of the four words of Advent, I believe the word joy is the most confusing for us because of the way that really the world displays it, the way that we may make it a trite concept. It's unique in the scriptures. So if you have your Bibles, I want you to open those to Psalm 126. Psalm 126. If you're unfamiliar with the Psalms, they are songs. That's kind of how it works. And songs, as you know, serve multiple purposes. Some songs for us help us to be happier. Some songs for us help us to really wallow in our pain. Some songs help us to consider what life is and why life is that. Some songs are really good remembrances for us. There are different genres of psalms in the same way there are different genres of songs. When you look through music, you've got country, you've got rap, you've got hip-hop, you've got worship, you've got musicals. You have a plethora, a myriad of options in regard to what a song is. And the psalms function in the same way because there are different types of psalms. On the way back from Waco last week, Nelly and her two seventh grade friends decided to ride with me as opposed to my wife. My wife actually said, hey, the girls are going to ride with you. And I'm not sure how familiar you are with middle school girls, but they are a different energy than any other creature on earth. There is no comparison. We get in the car and we begin to talk about numerous things, and they said words I've never heard before. And Noli always wants to be the DJ in the car. So we begin to choose different songs. And they began to pick some things I've never heard of. They chose some weirdos that I've never come across in my life. They chose bro country. They also listened to some old Taylor Swift because evidently that new album is problematic. There was some Aladdin that we listened to. We listened to 90s pop. I mean, Backstreet was back. We did it again. Bye, bye, bye. It was a life. And the weirdest thing was, though some of these songs were written when these children were never even thought of, they knew every word to every song. Every song. We walked into Chick-fil-A because Christianity, and they were laughing so hard that one of the three of them fell in the parking lot. And rather than the other two help her up, it was as if they fell too. As if that's what you should do at Chick-fil-A. Oh man, it's open. Fall down. So we sang Dear Evan Hansen. I didn't know that was a thing. And really, two of the girls didn't either. But Noli knew every word. And we were singing about windows. And it was a very confusing time. And when we think about something like that, where you've got three kids in the car, and they're just laughter. And we've all been there. If you've ever been around a teenager, you've been there. If you've ever been around a preteen, you've definitely been there. Is that joy? Well, no, it's moving us there. That's giddy. And giddy is not bad. It's good sometimes just to laugh over dumb things, like falling down. Joy is more than that. It's even more than happiness. Because there are lots of things that make me happy. Basketball makes me happy. Banana pudding makes me happy. But joy is more than that. So we're in this season where we're considering Christmas and the reason for it. And we're singing songs and we're taking, we took an Easter song that's been reworked into a Christmas song today and we celebrate that. What does it mean for me and for you to be people of joy? Let me give you a working definition for what joy is, and it's not going to be on the screen, but if you're a note taker, feel free to take this note. If you have your open AI taking notes, we'll see what happens when the robots take over. But it's joy is a constant knowing in a world that is full of questions. Joy is a constant knowing in a world that is full of questions. So Psalm 126 takes us toward the idea of joy. Let's see how the Scriptures unravel for us, if you will, this concept of what joy really is for a people. Psalm 126, when the Lord restored the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. Our mouths were filled with laughter then, and our tongues with shouts of joy. Then they said among the nations, "The Lord has done great things for them. The Lord has done great things for us. We were joyful. Restore our fortunes, Lord, like watercourses in the Negev. Those who sow in tears will reap with shouts of joy. Though one goes along weeping, carrying the bag of seed, he will surely come back with shouts of joy, carrying his sheaves." It's a psalm of ascent that we see here. It's taking us to a place. So, to give you our central idea for today, the Lord's true joy will see His people through. And because of that, we're going to ask three questions of this text, and I'm going to hope that these three questions will help you to see the good joy of God in the midst of a season where everyone else is just working through happiness and sadness. And I would say the same for myself. The Lord's true joy will see His people through. Three questions. Question one and two, what has happened? Because we need to always remember what has happened. Number two, what is happening? And number three, what will happen? What has happened? What is happening? What will happen? What will happen? This is a psalm of ascent. There are, as I mentioned earlier with the psalms, you've got various types. The psalms of ascent are where they are celebrating that the people of Israel are returning from exile. And as they return from exile, they are singing this. They have been encouraged to sing that God would bring them home from being captives in Babylon. And the people of Israel are on their way home. And in the words of Kate Bush, they were running up that hill back toward what was good. They were returning from captivity, and they were returning back to these very important things for them as a people, or at least that's what their history taught them. They were returning back to where they worshipped. They were returning back to what their identity should be and who their identity should be in. They were returning home, to go home. And maybe for us, we may have some hardships with the idea of going home, because home may not have been the best place for you. Maybe you consider your childhood and what took place at your house with your mom and dad, and it wasn't the greatest experience. Maybe you don't have the Folgers coffee advertisement opportunity when you consider going back to your house, back to your family. But the people of Israel here are told to consider, come back to the good things that God has done. Don't forget all of the ways that He's worked, all of the ways that He's cared for you, all of the ways that He's carried you through. What are we doing with this idea in this passage where we're going to ask the question, what's happened? We're encouraged to remember what God has done. Because restoration is not just that they would be restored to something that was emotional, but it is rooted in something. And for every one of us as followers of Jesus, I hope that this season comes with some sentimentality, but I hope that it comes with more than that. I hope that we will see that as we consider that God would send His Son in the form of a baby, as a child, that this is not just God giving us something to consider in commercials and in advertisements, but this is a picture. This is the embodiment of the covenant faithfulness of God to a wayward people. When the Lord restores the fortunes of Zion, we were like those who dream. What's being said is, when God sent us home, and we were able to think about all the good ways that He'd worked, That's what we've been longing for. That's what we've been hoping for. That's what we've been waiting for. That's what we've been anticipating. That's what we want. Verse 2. Our mouths were filled with laughter then, and our tongues with shouts of joy. There is a back and forth in this passage between an underlying joy and an overflowing joy. Underlying, overflowing. And you'll see the contrast as you go through it. There are moments where you see the knowing of the joy of God that is silent, and there are places where you see the exclamation of the joy of God erupting. This is God's emphatic yes, because we are saying and we are celebrating and we are singing that God has seen His people through. That God would see His people through. That God would care for the wayward. That God would care for the lowly. That God would pursue us. That God would do the work of saving us. That is more than sentimentality. It's bigger than that. And there is this part of this Christmas season for me and for you where I can look and I can see that I want to find my place in those things. What do I buy my kids? They let me know consistently. What do we pick up for them? What's Santa going to drop? If Santa drops something, there's an age where that ages out, I think. What's going to happen here? This is more than that. And I hope in the middle of this next week of all of the Christmas parties and the presents and the stuff that comes as you come to the conclusion of a school year. I mean, let's be honest. How many times do I have to go to that place this week? 2 half days? You know what happens when you add 2 halves together? It's a whole, and we can call it a week. I'm not on the board, nor have I been invited to be. On the other side of all of that, if I get to the end of Tuesday and I say, man, Tuesday's over, Tuesday's gone, and my Christmas culminates there, my joy culminates there, my joy may begin there, then I missed it. This erupting joy. Then they said among the nations, the Lord has done great things for them. Our whole story of the Christian faith is woven into the idea that we do not lose sight of what God has done. You can see it from page 1. When you get past the table of contents, God begins to deliver people. God begins to provide a way. Don't eat the fruit, the dum-dums eat the fruit. That's in the message. God provides a way. Abraham, as faulty as it gets, God provides a way. God delivers the children of Israel by parting the Red Sea. God provides a way. He was present in the exile. He's present in the Red Sea. He's always present. One pastor says this, the greatest threat to Christmas is not secularism, we've heard that, or consumerism, we partake in that, but our own boredom with the most thrilling story ever told. What we got this week, Grace? How bored are you with Christmas? How bored am I? Whenever we sing a song about the coming king, or whenever we sing a song about the death of that king, whenever we sing a song about the resurrection, we are doing the New Testament equivalent of singing the first few verses of Psalm 126. It is more than beneficial. It's godly even to remember the great things that God has done for us in the past. God saved some of you this year. Don't forget that. God restored some of your marriages this year. Don't forget that. God took care of medical needs this year for some of you. Don't forget that. One phrase, anybody want to tell me what you're remembering that God did? This is a participatory part of our program. I have one friend who says, never try to get me to preach. I'll never come to your church again. I really believe I can get one sermon out of just about any guy. Anybody? Anybody? One thing that God has done for you that you do not want to forget. We remember. Okay, well, that's what's happened. But not only do we ask what has happened, what is happening? As in that 70s sitcom. The Lord has done great things for us. We are joyful. Restore our fortunes, Lord, like watercourses in the Negev. That's a dry place in the Bible. Jerusalem, Israel as a whole, is super dry. It would be great for your sinuses, more than likely. It gets very little rain. Annually, 4 to 8 inches of rain. To put it in perspective, Lake Jackson gets 4 to 8 inches of rain in the morning dew every Thursday. Like, why is it soggy out here? In reality, we get 50 to 55 inches of rain a year, according to the interweb, which has all the answers, compared to 30 for the rest of the United States. This dryness is intended as a literal reference for something symbolically happening in the hearts of these people. Dry and unsaturated. The people of Israel, as they are asking what is happening, they are trusting. So when we look around and we see those dry, unsaturated, awful moments to get to the other side, we trust. That's what we do. We trust. We are exhausted. We need to be restored. We need to be made whole. We trust. Tim Keller says this, there is a joy available that the deepest grief cannot put out. No circumstance or person can take away from the joy that God gives. The waiting of Advent helps us to remember that we are in need. Deep, dark, desperate need. And this waiting helps to remember that this world is not all there is. Every bad diagnosis that we receive, that's not all there is. Every hardship we go through, that's not all there is. Every fractured family, that's not all there is. There is more promised to God's people. The psalmist is asking us for something dramatic. He's asking. So evidently, this area has dry riverbeds that would receive, that just don't get much rain. But when they do, they don't just get rain, they overflow. It rained in the hill country of Judea. Let's not get confused. We're not talking about the hill country of Texas or Spicewood or whatever. Y'all calm down. Texas is not in the Bible, contrary to what y'all believe. Whenever they would have these beds overflow, it would not do so minimally, it would be dramatic. Winter rains would do the exact same thing. It was drastic, it was transformative, and it changed everything. That's what you see them asking for here. And there's nothing wrong with us as God's people asking Him to do dramatic, drastic, overwhelming things in the face of our need. But we have to acknowledge the wholeness of need for that to be what we really want to see happen. Why would we ask God for something that we're not really wanting? We're hearing a lot of talk about revival in our country right now, and we like to write it on hats and stuff, sometimes upside down. And I'm really thankful for revival. I'm pro-revival. If it's rooted in the constant trust in the goodness of Jesus, if I'm rooting it in aura and vibes, and I drank 3 Alani's this morning, and we're getting some of that. Big testimonies and people turning from their sin. The church being what it's supposed to be, both locally and globally. We see that. Asbury Revival happened 2 years ago, and you're like, man, that was a Wesleyan thing. I said, well, that's okay. But you don't agree with them. Well, that's okay. They don't agree with you either. Reports are that 80,000 people have come to faith globally. So am I supposed to question that, or am I supposed to trust in the same sense of the brothers in the New Testament when they said, Jesus, this other guy is preaching and teaching in your name. Should we call down thunder on him and lightning? And I think that Jesus looked at them like they were bozos and said, "What? Actually, let's just roll with it." Also the message. We should celebrate the good that God does around the world. We really should. That's a good thing. And if it proves to be false, and if it proves to be fictitious, God's not stopped being God. And the good things that He did in the midst of it have not stopped being good. We should celebrate that. But what we also have to know on the other side of celebrating is this. Because we should believe that this will lead to lives changing. Lives changed of lost people, but lives changed of saved people. Poor people being fed, sick people being cared for. What the Bible calls the kingdom coming. And if we're not hoping for that, then what are you really hoping for? Trite Christianity is going to kill us. That's what real revival looks like in the New Testament. When the world is being made right. Well, what will happen? That's the next question we ask. So we look, what has happened? What has happened? Well, what is happening and what will happen? You get 5 and 6. And they remind us that these overflowing revival moments, these miraculous things where we're just standing up and dancing, that ain't most of it for us. What will happen, we will believe. We believe as we get through this. Are you believing in the face of your hardship that God's going to get you through? Verse 5, those who sow in tears will reap with shouts of joy. Though one goes along weeping, carrying the bag of sand, he will surely come back with shouts of joy, carrying his sheaves. Those who sow in tears. I'm assuming that some of us have had tear-filled 2025s. I know that some of us have. And 24, and 23, and 22, and 21. And we keep waiting for a miracle on top of a miracle. We keep waiting for something miraculous. And that's not coming. But we're trusting the ever-present presence of God to get us through. We're trusting that he's for us. We're trusting that he's not opposed to us. We're trusting that he is working out for good all things for those who love him and are called according to his purpose. We're believing that on top of believing that, even though we're not getting the revival moment that we're seeing around the world. We're not even getting a good vibe. We're just dealing with despair. We're sowing with tears. Those who are faithful to Jesus sow with tears. They're going to reap with joy. That's his promise. This is not it. If this world was it, then that's problematic. Did you feel how cold it was this morning? Or how hot it was yesterday? Where do we live? Those who sow in tears. Faithful believer, be encouraged with this. If you are working out the daily difficulties of life, faithfully trusting in Jesus, walking with Jesus, pursuing Jesus, trusting Jesus to be your joy, even though you're not happy and you're definitely not giddy. Joy comes in the morning when we are remembering he is working. When we are waiting, he is working. When we are weeping, he is working. When we are singing, he is working. When we are joyful, he is working. When we are despondent, he is working. Because here's the thing about Jesus. Because of Jesus, joy is not fragile. It's not fractured. It's whole. And God will wholly see his people through. That's his promise for us. And we know, we believe, we trust that God keeps his promises. And we do that during the season as we think about joy and the goodness of a newborn babe in a manger, who is also the creator of the world and the king of the universe. Working, 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 working. Will we trust that he's working? Would you bow your heads with me this morning? God, I thank you so much for this family of faith. And God, we do know that your work is what we get to think about today. The finished work of Jesus on the cross, present in us. So, Father, for my brothers and sisters in this room who are in a season that is full of joy, we're grateful. Where they are being able to see that joy outwardly, we're grateful. God, for those who are sowing with tears, we're hopeful. God, for those in this room who've never placed trust in you, Jesus, I'm not even sure why they're here, despondent, broken, hurting. God, I pray that they will see that only you, Jesus, can meet the needs of a lost person, that only you can make whole a broken person. So if you're not a follower of Jesus in this room today and you want to trust Jesus, would you just have an interaction with him? Jesus, I need you to give me the joy that this passage talks about. I need you to save me from my sin and turn me to yourself. If you prayed that or something like that, I'm in the back middle of the room behind that communion table. If you're a follower of Jesus in this room and you just want me to pray with you, I'd love to. I'd love to pray over you. I'd love to pray for you. Just ask the Lord to bless you in whatever season you may be in with this. We're going to come to the table as a family of faith in just a moment. If you're not a follower of Jesus, let me just give you some just simple instructions. Communion is for believing people. So if you're not a follower of Christ, you're not going to be ostracized or pushed away. If you don't come to the table, we actually ask for you not to do so, because it is something that believing people are called to do. If you're a follower of Jesus in this room and you're not a member of Grace, you're welcome at the table, because we know that Jesus has welcomed you to himself. If you're a member of Grace, come to the table. But will we not go lightly and tritely toward a table that remembers the heaviness of Jesus taking our sin upon himself? We ask all this, Jesus, in your name.